Chapter 6, Religious Legislation. Sermon by A.T. Jones. The speaker began by saying, "Tonight I will notice first the definition of civil. Civil means pertaining to a city or state, or to the relation of a citizen to a city or state. Government we call civil, and its laws civil laws. What then can any civil government rightly have to do with anything pertaining to God? The government pertains wholly to earthly things, to man related to his fellow man, or to the state. By the very definition, no government has anything at all to do with God or religion. Religious acts are religious, civil acts civil. Now, as my subject is civil government and religion, let us define religion. The recognition of God as an object of worship, love, and obedience. There is a deeper meaning, however. All nations have had some form of God, which they worshipped and honored. There are infidels, of course, but they are known only where the true God has been presented, and not known among heathens. The better definition, therefore, would be the recognition of a God. Another definition is man's personal relation of faith and obedience to God. These two define religion. Now then, what can any government have to do with religion? What is it to you whether I love, honor, or obey God or not? What harm does it do you if I do not? What can any company or government have to do with it? Nothing at all. And the definition of civil deprives government from having anything to do with religion. And that is what the scriptures teach. Turn to Matthew chapter 22, verses 15 to 23. Now Caesar was the head of the Roman government, of the whole world. And so, when Christ said, "Render unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's," he meant the civil government. What was to be rendered to Caesar? That which was God's? No, for he said unto God that which is God's. Making a clear distinction between those things that belong to God and those which belong to Caesar. Are there things that belong equally or partially, both to God and to Caesar? If so, where are we to make the separation? We cannot do so unless the distinction is clearly defined. Now mark what the Pharisees came to do. Entangle him in his talk. If these are those things that belong both to God and Caesar, then they did entangle him. But no, they left him convinced they had failed. When they admitted the coin was Caesar's, they admitted that with which they came to entangle him. Christ went further yet and told them to give God what belonged to him. So we are to render God what is his, but not through Caesar and without Caesar. The bill, in the last Congress, claimed to be one for the better observance of the Lord's Day. Now let us ask then, whose image and superscription does it bear? Why, they will say, "It is the Lord's." Then what has Caesar to do with it? And if it is the Lord's, then Caesar is robbing God of his day, is he not? Then again, the Sabbath, they say, is to be observed by civil process. Now then, how can a religious institution be observed civilly? It must be and can only be observed religiously. Christ's word is against the making of any laws in reference to the Sabbath or any other religious legislation. A number of the states have statutes against morality or moral offenses, and also statutes forbidding offenses against God. Now they have no right to have such laws. It places them as guardians over the Lord. How also are they to know what is or is not an offense against God? What has government to do with offenses against religion? It makes government partisan in character. Now, for a government to attempt to punish offenses against God is to have heathen states. Heathen governments had to enforce observance of worship towards their gods because the gods were not capable of taking care of their own honor. But God is fully capable of taking care of his. Our states have upon their statute books heathen enactments contrary to all Christian principles. To such, the reading found in Judges chapter 6, verses 25 to 32 will be a good study. These courts that attempt to punish offenses against God argue just as did the worshippers of Baal. They may learn wisdom from Joash's answer. These states usurp the prerogative of God in attempting to punish offenses against Him. Offenses against religion include blasphemy, which is to speak disrespectfully against the established religion, and there are statutes punishing such blasphemy. But every man has a right to speak so against any religion. Jesus, the apostles, and all Christians have had to do so. And if the statutes of Pennsylvania, New York, and other states were controlling all, it would not have been possible to have spread Christianity, because it is necessary to speak against the accepted religion in order to establish it. Another definition here is morality, the relation or conformity of an act to the divine law. And the definition of the divine law is obligatory on the conscience. If these statutes have to do with morality, they have to take cognizance of man's conscience. The moral law is summarily written in the Decalogue. Now this law does take cognizance of the conscience. If then the state is to enforce morality and punish for immorality, it has, according to our Savior and the Apostle John, to punish a man for thinking impurely or hating another. Can states punish where no outward act is committed? Certainly not. Then how can governments take cognizance of morality? God alone can judge in such matters. A government cannot move against a man until he becomes uncivil, and can take charge only of civility and not morality. I do not attack the statutes, but the heading and wording, using morality to define civility. States punish crime, which is the outward act, and sin God punishes, being the thought of the heart. A crime or breach of justice is a deed of the individual, which the state returns upon the head of the individual. But a sin is a breach against holiness and utterly refuses to be measured and cannot be atoned for by any finite action, is part of a lengthy quotation by the speaker. Crime is known to the government, but sin is known alone to God. Crime is not mentioned in the Bible, crime being a civil breach. Sin is that which God supervises. The papacy claims to be a moral government and to supervise the thoughts of man. And to find out the thoughts, they had to establish the Inquisition. And this belongs to every government that attempts to take cognizance of morality. The Inquisition was always carried on to save men's souls, not to punish them. Now the Constitution of the United States embodies the principles of Christ when it says Congress shall make no law respecting a religion. So that provision utterly prohibits our government from making any law to enforce religious observances. The speaker then read from Bancroft's History of the U.S. in reference to the perfect liberty in religion introduced by Christ and its contamination by Roman government, making it national, circumscribing it, and forcing a change in its character, until the United States freed it from contamination and reestablished its true nature, being the only government in the world that is in harmony with Christ and the Scriptures, and should ever be maintained inviolate. Yet there are people in every state, Kansas included, that are doing their best to obtain a change of the Constitution, to establish a national religion. Just as soon as such a thing is done, religious freedom in our country becomes a thing of the past. The speaker then went on to show that the Constitution of the United States did not protect a citizen of a state from religious legislation in the states. It only protected an American if in a foreign country. But every state can make all the laws it pleases. This is why Utah is not admitted, because the Mormons would establish theirs as a state religion. Congress should prohibit states from making such laws, and so the effort should be to lift the Constitution of the states up to the level of that of the United States.